When did you start to talk about sociology or research at all to Philip?
To Philip?
He must have been by that time, he must have been interested in what you were doing as well as in what he was doing.
I think your real interest, you know, as distinct from just polite interest, would be when I began doing surveys for the Labour Party, which I think he disapproved of, fundamentally.
Why?
He didn't think a political party should base its organisation, its propaganda, you know, its general conduct on survey research. It should have a clear-cut ideology and stay with that.
Subsequently proved wrong, of course. That belief.
Yeah. So that I think he didn't approve of it, but he was interested in it. I mean, for example, the first one I did for the Labour Party was on how would the British public, and this was for Gaitskill in 54, how would the British public take the idea of comprehensive schools? Did they know what comprehensive schools were? What did they think of the 11 plus selection procedures and so on? And I think that was what first turned him against it. Because what the public said was two things. First of all, they said, by and large, these were the parents of young school children. By the time our Johnny is 14, we want him to be out there working and making some contribution to the family income. We need the money. The way he's spending money now on his bicycle, we need it. Or by the time Doris is 14, she ought to be beginning to help the family. Which, you know, a long-standing tradition, attitude.
Yeah.
And up to a point made sense. That was one attitude. Another attitude was, well, no, we think the 11 plus, all right, of course the brainy ones get through, don't they? And that's fair. And then I was asked by Gaitskill to present this to executive Labour Party and its educational advisors. Its educational advisors were a man called Max Morris, a communist, Margaret Cole, and Tawney. I got up, gave them the results, and then the inferences from the results, that what was needed was an educational program for the voters and not an educational policy for children, that the party had not put over its social case for abandoning selection. And I was very lucky there at that point, because evidence was beginning to emerge that something like 20% of elementary school children who had later on been called up to the armed forces as conscripts were showing scores on various tests which put them way ahead of many of the middle class children who went on to universities. And I said, you know, you've simply got to educate the public, the voters, that you have a social case to put to them and that you have an efficiency program to put to them. Simply out of sheer self-interest, the country's got to make the best use of its resources. And I remember, I think it was either Max Morris or Margaret Cole got up and said, the sort of thing you're saying reminds me of Goebbels. You want to twist people's minds. We know what is good, and we should therefore pursue what is good. Torney then spoke up, and Torney said, well, you know, you may never have an opportunity. You may lose every election if that is your attitude.
Mm.
I think, you know, perhaps we do have an education, you know, very gently. And Gaitskill, of course, was on Torney's side, and on my side. But I don't think Philip was at that point. So that was when he began to take an interest in it, but it was a critical interest. Mm. And I remember when a woman member of the Labour Party executive said why they were in danger, you know, because they were still in office then, of losing the next election, was because they were not appealing to the altruism of young people.
Mm.
And would I do a survey to show the extensiveness of this altruism? And then the Labour Party could appeal to the young on the basis of it was the party of altruism. I said, okay. So we had, you know, the usual sort of questions. Have you done any voluntary unpaid work at all for anyone or any cause or any organisation at any time in the past 12 months? 3% said yes. And we said, would you please tell us exactly what it was? And most of them, yes, it was accurate. You know, the description they gave justified their claims. And then we said, right, now supposing the British government had surplus funds to dispose of, they wanted to spend them on things which would benefit people in general. Here are half a dozen. Send food to people who are starving in Biafra, Nigeria. Increase old age pensions by 5 shillings a week. Build bigger leisure centres for young people. A dozen or so of these things. The Biafrans didn't get a showing in. It didn't even come to 1%. Old age pensions, I'll tell with that as well. It was build stadiums for young people. So I took the results back and said, look, I don't think you're going to win the election with these new voters based on their altruism.
Mm.
You can't bribe them, because in any case they say they're going to vote Labour. Don't upset them by saying you're going to waste money on starving people in Africa. It'll only irritate them. I don't think she spoke to me for months and months after that. But that was the sort of thing I think interested him.
He did some work on the army, didn't he?
Yeah. That was the thing that really caught him. Well, I'd known Maurice Janowitz from the war. We'd worked together. Maurice and Ed Shills and myself had worked together on German propaganda, German morale, and so on. And Maurice became very interested in the military. Military sociology became his great obsession. Wanted to know more and more about it. Wrote to me and said, who in Britain is equally obsessed, has the same set of interest? I couldn't think of anyone.
Mm.
There was a man called Brian Tunstall, but he was only interested in sailors, because he lectured at the Greenwich Naval College. I said to Philip, what about you? I suppose it's just good as anything else to do, isn't it? So Morris came over, had discussions, and he got Philip really interested in the sheer incompetence and inefficiency and dysfunctionalism of a military caste in a democratic society. And he wrote a couple of very good papers. That's the sort of stuff I want this man Boomer to include, but I don't think he will. However, I won't go into that now. But that was when it started. And then when he went off to Chicago and really met as a colleague in the in the senior common room, you know, opening seminars, the Chicago people, that he really saw that it was sociology he wanted. I remember you coming home one day and seeing the kids at school were chasing you and shouting, "Whitey, Whitey, Whitey, get that Whitey!"
Did you come across to Chicago to visit us? I can't remember.
The who?
Did you come to Chicago to visit us?
Yes, I did, because I think it was you standing there that Gail told me that you'd come home, told him that.
It was a strange place to be as a kid.
Yeah, I bet it was.
Yeah, but by that time I was nine. I'd been around for quite a while, hadn't I? And Dad's interests had moved on from that military work, rather, hadn't they?
Yeah, not entirely. He still was interested in my thinking, you know, if he'd had 36 hours in a day. Rather than 25, he would have liked to have gone on with it. Because he felt he wasn't exhausted, and he would be exhausted. He was then... Well, you see, Morris, when Philip was there on his year's secondment, sabbatical, whatever it was, he got Philip to write The Origins of British Sociology. And that's when Philip, I think, really began to develop his theoretical ideas about sociology. Basically, his theory was that the main reason why Britain had never produced a decent sociologist, which was true when you compare it with France or Germany or America, was because its political statisticians had been too successful. That if we were a Booth or a Roundtree, you could change the whole of society with the statistics you produced about poverty in England or about old age in England. And that had acted as a powerful magnet to draw potential sociological material away to doing survey research, mainly concerned with poverty. And I think he was probably right in that, was it a loss to Britain? Who the hell cares about two or three more sociologists of world renown when it comes to being able to document poverty so clearly and unambiguously that you could make people shut up talking about they're poor because they're idle, and because they're drunkards, and because they don't like work, and being able to say, no, they're poor because you don't pay them decent wages, or they're poor because you turn them off when you've got no orders. They have nothing to fall back on. I'm sure if I had a choice, I haven't of course now, much too old, but if only I'd had a choice between continuing along the line of work that Booth and Roundtree had made so popular in this country. So, not popular is not the right word, so powerfully effective in shaping this country, or producing a new theory of group adhesion, adhesiveness, I would say, let me do another survey. Whereas I don't think Philip ever felt that way. He was much more in the line of my grandfather, if I may say so, who was a rabbi and was a great Talmudic scholar. He would sit and look at his stuff and say, well, now, when you use that word, it has behind it a traditional meaning, it has a contemporary conceptual meaning, it has a vulgar meaning of the populace, it has an elitist meaning. Now, let's separate these out. And my grandfather would spend day after day after day going through a line of the Talmud to straighten out all these possibilities and then rank them. You know, I think Philip had something of that in him.